Hi, I'm Kyle on episode 498 of the MWA podcast. Sean, Mark, and myself are asking Jeremy Wright the five questions. And if you haven't already, be sure to check out Jeremy's interview on episode 497. So welcome back to the show, Jeremy.
Glad to be back.
Yep.
Awesome.
I forgot to ask you if I'm actually pronouncing your last name correctly. It's Wright, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Kyle, even for Texas, that's a hard one to mess up.
I know.
If you know the Wright brothers, you know, or most of the word of that direction, opposite left, is in it, it's probably right.
Well, you know, the W in front of it, you know, just kind of threw me.
Yeah.
Right.
We just got to have let Kyle have his dad joke moment.
Okay, all right.
I've been the bad, you know, wrong, left, all that for my whole life.
Yeah.
Well, before we ask Jeremy the five questions, we need to thank our patrons. So who do we have to thank this week?
This week, we want to send, well, first, we want to thank all of our Patreon supporters. We appreciate your support. But today, we're singling out Kevin McMahon. So we want to say thank you to Kevin for supporting the show. And if you would like to support the MWA podcast, go to www.patreon.com/MWA podcast. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks. Well, let's get on to the five questions. So first up, what is your favorite tool? And remember, our limit's 23.
So I don't know if I can reference the other podcast, the other
sure.
one from that other magazine, the Shop Talk Live one, but I'm going to give a Pekovich answer here. And my favorite
blue tape?
My favorite tool is the custom one. That's what I've learned is that my favorite tools are the ones that have a history or a very specific connection to a maker. So, my first start with that is I had saved a ton of money to finally get a Sauer & Steiner plane, back in 2017. I put my name on the list. And Conrad,
yeah, that's the one we saw at Handworks.
That's the one we saw, right? It's the purple one.
Yeah, eventually I got it. But I got my his shoulder was out and he was not making planes anymore for a while. Yeah. And we weren't he wasn't sure if he was ever going to make planes again. And so I was like, oh crap! Like I should have bought this plane before I had the money for it necessarily because I really want this thing. And it's the same sort of thing. There's been several custom makers that I've been fortunate enough to get items from, and they're no longer in business, and they're amazing planes. Like Oliver Sparks, I have one of his planes, an incredible plane. And so, and he's a great maker, and he doesn't make planes anymore.
Did you get a slipper?
Similarly,
plane?
Some different. What's up?
Did you get a slipper plane?
I did. It has been an amazing plane.
I got it.
Did you just say something I don't have to edit out?
No. It's not real hate. It's jealousy hate. I got a Dram plane from him. I got a one of his little team, and it was smaller than. Oh, there it is. Oh, God. I need to learn. Can you loan that to me for a little while so I can learn how to make it?
Good luck. I don't know if anybody.
Low profile, very low angle.
Sexy smoother.
Coffin smoothing plane.
Can you not see the mouth? Because there is none.
Wow.
That's so small.
Yeah.
Small,
okay. I have to go get my show and tell. You guys keep ooing and awing over that plane. I'll be right back.
I would like to see that. I would like to see that Dram plane. It is an amazing plane. This one is in Foster bronze and Partridge wood. It's a great plane. But
what kind of bronze is it?
Phosphor bronze. So it's kind of, when it first came, it was almost the color of a penny. It's very shiny copper kind of color. Mm-hmm. Since then, it has definitely mellowed out. I don't know if that's really showing on the screen. This makes great audio, but
yeah, that's right. This is video too. It's our inaugural video. So there'll be people really enjoying that hand plane.
It's a beautiful plane.
My gosh.
Yeah, look, that's an awesome plane too.
What
Tiny rabbit plane.
Yeah.
Well, what's that one called?
This is the Dram plane.
Dram. Okay.
And so it's a little smaller than I thought it was going to be because I needed a smaller shoulder plane, you know, but just.
And this is what you use for building benches, right?
Yeah. This is totally. Yeah. Yeah. It's such a cool plane. Yeah, even when I got it and I was like, wow, that's a little smaller than I thought. I still don't regret it. And I use it. It's great for getting that. When you cut in like at a 90 degree angle from two different directions with a table saw and you got that little corner of garbage in there,
Right.
This thing is perfect for getting that out. But I, there's other been other times when I've had to, you know, like I had a tight spot and I just, this was the only plane that I had that would work other than like sitting there with a chisel and very slowly, you know, trying to slice mm-hmm. material out. But yeah, I wish Ollie was still making stuff. He was such an incredible, he is an incredible talent. Yeah. I agree. How it is when you're making tools, like you, especially if you have a passion for it, you realize at some point, like, wow, I can't begin to make back the time and effort I put into these things. And
absolutely.
And I think a lot of that is just fear. I think, he probably could have, most people probably could have if they weren't too afraid to ask mm-hmm. for it, but
yeah,
that's just, I'll get off thanks for coming to my TED talk.
but yeah, that's my point is my favorite tool are the custom ones that are just, because they have a story, they're a person. Maybe some of my tools I've gotten while I've traveled. So like I went to Chris Pesper's shop and picked up a bevel from the shop. Pretty cool, right? Now every time I use that bevel, I think of that whole experience. And that's so awesome. These custom opportunities are well worth it. They seem crazy expensive, but these guys are gone. Oftentimes, like I also have a Jim Leamy plane, and he's no longer with us. And you know, like then there's other guys that have come and gone. And you know, as far as in the business, and you know, so you got, if you see something that speaks to you, you got to get it. You got to get it.
Yeah.
Because it might not be there forever. So gotta get it.
But it's good. I mean, you mentioned in the case of your Oliver one, you know, you're using it. You found a use for it. Or and Mark the same. Like these aren't just ornate things that are sitting on a shelf and being ogled. Like they're functional, you know, tools made by bespoke people. And that is a wonderful, wonderful side of the craft.
Yeah.
Yeah. This little slipper plane, I have not found something that it can. Like even though it's low angle and whatever, it's like it's so finely tuned that it just whatever, it just walks through it all.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Yeah. But understand tool makers. You know, if I didn't have a pension, I wouldn't be doing my tool making.
fair.
Yep.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. You got to kind of have a passion for it and enjoy doing it. And, but yeah, the pay's not there unless you're charging enough. And
yeah, the rewards are rarely monetary. People see, like Conrad's prices and they think, oh my God, that's an expensive place. It's not.
No.
When you add up the expertise and the hours that go into it, you know, like you're paying your mechanic way more per hour than you're paying Conrad to make a hand plane. And, you know, it's a lot of skill. I don't know if it's more, it's just different.
Yeah.
I think of these things, these phones we buy, like they're, how expensive are those? Like, and in 3 years, what is it? It's garbage, right? Like, not, I don't know, whatever.
give up one generation of iPhone and you can have a hand plane from a hand plane maker.
That's actually not a bad sales ticket there. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Having just updated three phones in my household.
You would happily skip.
Yeah. It's all right.
I'm still rocking the iPhone 10.
Man.
Yeah.
I started to run out of storage on my phones, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, so now I just buy the bigger phone now and it started to last longer again. Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jeremy. Go ahead. Okay. Next question.
No, go ahead.
Who has influenced you the most?
I would have to say that would probably be Chris Schwarz, which is probably not a unique answer on
that's
on
okay. This, it's your podcast.
But yeah, I think not so much the style of work, but just his writing and kind of the big tent he has cast over the woodworking renaissance, I guess, or traditional woodworking renaissance. That's really been, you know, we had Roy, we had Lee Nielsen, we had Lee Valley, you know, they were kind of the forerunners, but I feel like Chris was at the right place at the right time and really put in the work and just has helped drag a whole lot of us from, I can't even imagine a time before blogs and all the internet stuff. Sure. So
it was the,
I don't want to skip.
He was like the right voice at the right time for the right people. I mean, he has a huge following for good reason. And it's same thing. I mean, he's entertaining to read. He's wonderful to speak to in person.
you know, and it's just a, you know, a good communicator and a lover of the craft by far.
And approachable, like
very approachable.
The way as like, this is something I could make, you know, like, yeah. I feel like, so I remember the day that I read the first Chris blog post, and I was like, I don't even know, that whole week was a blur as I read every single one before that, you know, back in 2006 or 2007, somewhere in there. And it was like, I had never, you know, I'd read Fine Woodworking, I'd read a lot of the magazines, and it was just like so different. And it was just like, this is like something that I can approach, as opposed to like, you know, you see all these fantastic projects in Fine Woodworking that are just, to me, beyond my skill, or just simply the amount of time that I could dedicate to a project. Or they're amazing. I'm glad that somebody's making them. But like at that time, especially, that was the first time, you know, what's this blog thing, you know, and what's this internet? You can get woodworking on the internet? Wow. You know, and that was amazing. So it was really a great spot, and definitely influenced my woodworking.
For sure.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. But I would want to say that there's nothing in Fine Woodworking that's beyond the average woodworker, as long as you have the, like you said, the time to put into the project. Yeah, it's all
oh sure, I think
pretty much doable.
Good,
except you know, some of that high end marketry stuff. I don't know about that.
Thibodeau like puzzle boxes and things, and you're like, what in the world? Like, how in the world would I ever do this? Yeah, crazy.
That sounds like something you could do on a remote non-woodworking class.
Yeah.
That would be a good challenge for a group of people to do that they've never done before. Because I've never made a puzzle box. I've never made a nice box.
Oh, right. Wow. That would be kind of fun.
Yeah. I've made a couple of nice boxes, but they were fun to do. They were fun to
I've
do.
Made not nice boxes. splined miters at best.
Yeah.
You know?
There you go.
I mean, they were fine. But the puzzle boxes, like is it CT Fine Furniture? We've had them on the show.
Oh yeah, those things are amazing.
Amazing.
The furniture. He's got like a table. He just posted something with I don't even know
mechanisms inside for it pulls up and pushed out from inside. Like,
and he's been holding onto those videos forever because he's waiting for the client to solve the puzzle first.
He did one for a guy I have on YouTube who does, you know, puzzles. Mm-hmm. And it was a $1,000 puzzle box that he did. And it took this guy a month to get it, or no, more than a month to get it. I forget how long it took to produce, but it was hours in solving it. Mm-hmm. And Craig didn't, show his video until that one was finally done and solved by the user. But it was cool because I got to see it from both sides. Like, I got to see the guy trying to solve it, and then I got to see the guy that made it. Like, and it's precision on precision on very cool movements inside. It's just it's so cool.
Yeah. So anyway, if we can have him, Craig, as one of the persons.
Oh, yeah.
He's the expert. For boxes. Yeah.
Well, so maybe that's where the joiner fee should go into paying for design for the piece, right?
Yeah. So even I thought you could have, to revisit that idea, like, you could have kind of a guest speaker that is specifically talking about the design, that so you'd have somebody that is a specialty could come in and talk about kind of review some of the designs or
suggest
right them. And that one appearance like sets up the whole project, right? And then you're on your own, like, so, or we work together, but you know, there's no guest speaker, and then maybe they come back at the end and, you know, evaluate the stuff. Sorry to completely throwback to an old episode, but that's a good thing, right? Good. Throwback.
Yeah, I have to go back to
the previous episode. It's only been a week, you know.
Yeah,
still flash in everybody's minds.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is your woodworking white whale?
I really like this question. This is a great question you guys added recently. I think it's, for me, it's like always the next thing. But there's kind of this thing that's been grinding in my brain for a couple of years now. There's a chair by a designer named Peter Obstick. You might be familiar with his, like, the kneeling chair, it's kind of like a rocking chair that you kneel on. He has a chair that's called the Gravity Balance chair. I don't want to make that chair because I'm not wild about the way it looks, but the functionality of it is it goes from a forward leaning, like, perch angle to a upright, to a recline, and to a full, like, zero gravity chair. and it's a really cool, so it's kind of like a rocker in that way, but it moves between positions. And I'd like to, I really want to, I've been working on some different designs for that, either like in a, like a, almost an origami kind of shape, or a truss style, like a bridge kind of construction, or a Maloof style. Like, I know it's like disconnected, but I'm still like trying to figure out what direction I want to go with that. But I'm really like tied to this design of like this multi-stage chair where it kind of has multi-positions, but it's still not, so it's not a moving chair like a rocker, but it's a multi-position chair. If that makes sense.
What's the designer again?
Peter, P-E-T-R, Obstvik, O-B-S-V-I-C-K. It's the chair is the Gravity Balance, but it's not spelled balance. Okay. It's B-A-L-A.
He's licensed it to a manufacturer called Verrier. Yep. Okay. All right. But maybe we'll throw some pictures up on the video.
The concept is interesting. I'm not wild about the shape. To me, it looks like an IKEA chair in a way. And it's a little simple.
It's all,
like this kind
all
of
laminated
bent wood.
Plywood, bent plywood. Mm-hmm.
And so, but I feel like that could be reinterpreted into an interesting shape and be pretty cool chair. So
okay, yeah, I have some.
That's my white whale.
You have some deck chairs that are like that.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I got them at Sam's Club because I keep threatening my wife to make some deck chairs, and she goes, "Why? These are super comfortable."
Yeah, I do. I've got the like the zero gravity chairs that like you can sit in it, but you if you lean back, it transforms to like a flat platen that is kind of level, you know.
Yeah.
And then when you bends down, it's so yeah, it's a little bit of transformative in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, are you thinking all my wood or upholstery and wood like the original?
I'm thinking maybe more like wood with like Danish cord, I think might be cool. Or could be all wood, depending on the direction of the design. But I think it's kind of, I was talking to Pete Galbert at this at Handworks, and he was kind of interested in the idea, but it's like, there's a lot of complexity there with the, like the CG, like you have to keep that just in the right spot.
Right.
Sure.
To be able to actually be able to move from one position to the next.
Sure.
Without like being stuck.
And
you gotta being stuck or falling over.
Going all the way. You might have to use some CAD to figure this out.
Because the deck chairs we have do that same type of motion, but totally different. It's like within a frame that it does that. So yeah, the frame doesn't move.
It moves. Okay.
It extends as it rolls through it. But like if you're talking about Danish cord versus upholstery, I mean, you're talking about the pressures are different as you move. And so Danish cord might pinch, you know, in the right place, you know, if it's you're on a slanted angle because your seat is leaning backwards or, you know, different things going on there. That's something to.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing I'm thinking about I'm struggling with is in the forward position. Yeah, I would like to see the deck chairs. That would be cool. But like in the forward position, like when you need some sort of knee support if you're going to be in a kneeling position, which I may or may not incorporate that. It might just go into kind of more of a perch style shape position. I don't know. I haven't finalized enough, and it's way down on the projects of I need to get my shop built. And a couple
that's kind of important. You need a place to build these chairs before you try to build these chairs.
And I'm really excited about this Hyperion chair, man. I really want to build one of those chairs, and I just haven't. I can't get to it.
I was last week when we were talking about your virtual class, I was thinking about that Hyperion chair would be a perfect thing to. Do and
it really
class.
Would that really would be a great example because it's already designed. It's great.
It's there. With that question out of the way, let's go on to the next one. What is your biggest stumbling block?
I would say
not having a shop.
Yeah, well, shop in progress.
Right now, not the Miata construction
shop in progress. My one-ton Miata.
twin dual Miata.
Duels. But I think that's honestly like that's a depressing thing right now. Is just working on a shop. My garage shop is just completely full of construction materials and things because I'm trying not to load up my shop. My new shop, and it's just kind of depressing. Like I know it's going to be, I still have all these things I still have to do on the other shop, and it's going to be a long time before I actually get to make some stuff. But probably my biggest stumbling block tends to be my daydreaming about projects and kind of not doing and just lazy, I guess I would say laziness, but you know, it's active, like semi-active, but missing a lot of the small opportunities I have to go out in the shop and clean up or just make, you know, one or two cuts or a small joint or something like that on to make forward progress on a more regular basis. It's more easy to just scroll Instagram, right?
Yeah,
that's fair. That is fair.
Speaking of Instagram, how has the internet influenced your work?
It's ruined my life for time. So on that front, it's terrible. But on the upside, like it's really opened up a ton of opportunities for inspiration, and also like I can't even imagine what woodworking at this stage of my life would be like without all of the friends that I've met on Instagram or wherever, reading blogs and things like that. There's just a much more social aspect that I don't think, you know, 20 years ago was not possible. You know, and 25 years ago, 20, 30 years ago, like you couldn't even imagine that woodworking would be a social thing that you would get together with people on the other side of the world that are experts. And you could just, you know, chit chat about chairs or something like that. Pretty amazing. Yeah.
Cool.
On that side. But I waste way too much time on Instagram or reading blogs about things I already know about or watching YouTube videos that I'm like, that's pretty cool, but I'm never going to make that. Or I already have made that and I never will again or whatever, you know.
Let me learn a sixth way to accomplish this thing.
Yes, exactly. There's
it's so cool.
There's one YouTube account. I think he also has an Instagram account. It's somebody either out of, I don't know, I want to say either like South Korea or Japan, that makes these little jigs about all kinds of stuff.
Takuma.
Yeah, there's like two or three of these guys.
Yeah,
it might be the same guy, but
might be.
But some of those things are just like, just incredible. I mean, some of it's just like, some of it's so silly, and then some of it's like, hey, he's got a great idea here.
Yeah, that's exactly smart.
Yeah, sometimes you think, oh, that's terrible. Like, I don't want to, why would, that seems way more work than it's worth.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's it seems really, like a lot of work to avoid doing the other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it's always cool. Always cool. Well, with that, Jeremy, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
I am still at JMAW. Those are my initials. Works, WRKCA, yeah, whatever. You know how to spell work. So works, JMAW. Works, I'm an Instagram and Substack, but that's mostly on Instagram.
Fantastic. Mark, what about yourself?
Well, you can find me at Instagram at Mark Builds It. You can find me on YouTube at The Joint Effort. You can go to thejointeffort.net jointeffort.net and subscribe to my newsletter. And you reminded me, Jeremy, the series of videos that I'm working on right now are actually all about making progress with small amounts of time. So I have a timer, like a time timer running in the background the whole time. And I set it for an hour. And the goal is to try to get everything done in about a half an hour. But it's just to show people like just how much you can do in less time than you think. So if you're interested in watching those videos, they're over at The Joint Effort on Instagram, or they're coming to your inbox if you subscribe to my newsletter from The Joint Effort.
And I will. And I will second that. Every time I go to do it and I actually get out in the shop and do 5 or 10 minutes worth of work, I'm always amazed.
I did.
How much you can
do. Well, the first video is I'm starting a project and I had to use a handsaw to rip through like 27 inches of hard maple, 8/4 hard maple. And as I'm doing it, it feels like a freaking eternity. Like I am like, will this never end? Right. And then I go back to edit and I'm looking at the clock. It was 10 minutes. I spent 10 minutes ripping a board and the saw is dull. Like I discovered while I'm like, I think this saw, it's an old Distin that I picked up from somebody. I never sharpened it. It cuts, but it's not sharp. And so I was like, that just felt way harder than it really was. And it seemed like it took way more time than it really does. But with, you know, like there's proof, there's a timer there running. And the first video I shot, I was like stopping the timer and then, you know, when I moved the camera and I'd start it back up again, From here on out, though, I think I'm just going to let it run even while I'm moving the camera around, because it's still just not that much time. You know, this last video that I did is 45 minutes of work. And
well, I will compliment you on the video you had on the spokeshave, where you
know
how to enter and exit a cut on with the spokeshave. People talk about that all the time, but not many people actually do a video and show you the actual physical how you
roll out, man.
Roll out and roll out.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's the same with travishers. It's the same with hand planes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I just hadn't thought about it until I started teaching chair making. Like, I need a way to articulate this.
Yeah.
And that's what come up.
Well, that's what, when you said that, I went, oh yeah, I know. You know, it's one of those things. Yeah, I know all this, but I'm going, wait a minute. I've seen this demonstrated in class, but I've never seen somebody actually do a video on this simple but yet critical technique.
Awesome. I'm glad it helped. It didn't help you, but
I'm sure it helped a bunch of folks. Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those things you got to build up muscle memory for too. It doesn't come natural.
It's funny. I'll explain it to a student
and
they'll be like, they'll be rolling this way. I'm like, no, other way. Like it is really counterintuitive. It is not. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, it's like scooping dirt. You know, you scoop down and scoop back up again. But like, it's the exact opposite.
That,
you know. So, Kyle, where can we find you?
You can always find me at Barton.Kyle or BB Custom Tools on Instagram, bbcustomtools.com, or on YouTube under BB Custom Tools or Kyle Barton. Sean, what about yourself?
For usual, you could find me at SeanW78 on most social medias.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.